Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Thanks for checking in. Busy hour on tap. Major League Baseball games coming up in 15 minutes. Brett McMurphy, bottom of the hour. Now a little something we'd like to call, I don't want to overreact, but to begin the hour, Pauly.
It's early, but I'm already buying in. Gary Patterson, big fan. And again, to shut out Fresno and to hold their opponent to the fewest yards allowed since 2008. Scary with this offense. It is a brutal schedule. But if there's going to be a team that can make a case to get in at 9-3, it could be USC. And I don't overreact, but all this talk about USC. What if UCLA is back? Good win by Chesney. Comes in from James Madison. One at Cal. Love the Cal uniforms. UCLA won 45-24. They were great offensively. This is not the Big Ten from last year where there was crap at the bottom. With Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana, USC, Penn State, Washington. There's depth. Illinois, there could be chaos. And I think there's going to be a week-in, week-out grind in the Big Ten. Also, I don't want to overreact, but these could be scary numbers what Levitt puts up with Kiffin at LSU. Not so much passing, but the rushing. What if he's going to run the ball 15, 20 times a game by design and going up-tempo and how good and professional that looked? Right off the bat, the interception wasn't his fault on the wide receiver, but then they just trucked Clemson and they were perfect the rest of the way. And again, I talked about scheme and Clemson being confused. Guys running wide open with a lot of those as well, and they were excellent. I don't want to overreact, but I'm buying Boise being back and being a contender. To be a 24-point dog and outplay Oregon, and they should have had a bigger lead at the half before that miscue with the last minute and what they did with the clock with the timeout as well. But if that's a top-three team and a top-three pick at quarterback that they have, and you lose by seven and you had the lead late with a chance to win, good things for Boise and could be a factor once we get to the playoff. I don't want to overreact, but the Pac-12 and the Mountain West seem to be terrible. 0-9 against Power 4 teams in Week 1. Some of these weren't close. Good showing by New Mexico to win 38-7, but some of these performances were bad. And UNLV Hawaii was a game that stuck out, too. A lot of talk about UNLV being a playoff team. You lose at home to Memphis, and you beat Hawaii 21-6, and again, Arnold struggles throwing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to overreact, but the Louis Armstrong Court is my favorite venue in tennis. It holds 17,000 people, quaint, intimate, but also how they designed it and how they built it. You have to check out some matches here in the next couple days if you haven't already. How they put this thing together and how it's built and how the fans are on top of you and you can hear and feel them and how they designed it. A-plus by what they did. And you mentioned the dominance earlier and the generational run that we had. I think maybe we just stink at tennis when it comes to what's men and how it transpired going back. There are four men that are still left in the U.S. Open draw. If Shelton can surprise Alcaraz tomorrow, who's minus 160 to win the whole thing now, then that guarantees an American makes the final. But here's the drought. Roddick, 2003 U.S. Open, the last time an American man won a major. Jim Courier, Australian Open, 1993.
Oh, boy.
Come on. Sampras, Wimbledon, 2000. Agassi, French Open, 1999. I don't care about Federer, Nadal, going down the list. That's embarrassing. What happened to us with tennis? How can we go since 2003 without winning a major? And where our hopes, Luke says it's Tiafoe who plays tomorrow morning, and more on that coming up. I think it's Shelton with our only chance here. If he beats Alcaraz, I think he wins the U.S. Open.
What would you rather have? American men really good at tennis or the U.S. men's national soccer team?
Oh, soccer.
And no doubt.
Yeah, soccer.
There's absolutely no debate about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 2003?
Well, those other numbers are...
1993. I know. Right? Australian Open, 1993. Last American. My God.
That's the last time that a Canadian team won the cup.
Oh, well, 93?
Okay, I don't want to overreact. The Oregon Ducks cannot win the national championship.
Oh, come on.
They
come
can't.
On.
They're not going to win the national championship, Paulie. Their schedule, and by the way, their number is now plus 950, maybe 10-1 after they struggle a little bit with Boise. Better than what it was, obviously, before the game. I think they lose at USC. I think they lose at Ohio State. Do they lose at Illinois? Do they get beat against Washington in the finale this season? I think they're probably going to be a playoff team. I've heard it over and over and over again. It kind of kills me to say this. I've been to that stadium a couple of times.
That's a doable schedule.
It is not a doable schedule.
Yes, it is.
They have a minimum two losses. I just told you their losses. Book it right now. They're losing at SC, losing at Ohio State.
Book it.
Oh, yeah. Minimum two losses.
Okay.
But I still think a playoff team.
Sure, that'll get you in. Yeah, 10-2 will get you in, yeah.
How many times have I had to sit here and listen and buy into, oh, this is the year Oregon, the most loaded roster they've ever had. Yada, yada, yada. Okay. And Boise might be really good. I get that. However, I don't trust Dan Lanning as far as you can throw him. And it brings me to this as well. I don't want to overreact, but please, for the love of God, nobody have Dante Moore projected as the first overall pick in the draft. I don't know. I don't know if I take him in the third round. That's not an overreaction.
Browns will take him second.
Probably. Yes. The talk that he skipped the draft last year because the Jets might take him, I thought that was foolish. Dante Moore is not a very good quarterback. He's fine. But to have him, like, in the mix to win the Heisman, I can't even... He's not in the same sentence as, like, 10 other guys in the country. So you can have Dante Moore all day long. That's another reason why I can't have the Ducks winning it all this year. They're on my list of teams that can't. I don't want to overreact, but the Michigan Review was the most mad I have been since the Tuck Rule.
Hmm.
So other like, calls that came into my head... Remember the Saints-Rams NFC title game?
That was bad.
The non-call on the PI?
That was speechless.
Okay, that's awful. That's also subjective, though.
Yeah.
This is a clock that everybody can see. And now you're just going to make stuff up or have this secret clock that the public is unaware of? Mike Pereira said it, the longtime rules analyst on Fox Sports. Like, we go, if there's two different clocks, we go by the one that everybody can see on TV.
Yeah.
What was the nonsense that... And the Tuck Rule, that's the play after when Mike Holmgren stood up in the GM and the coaches' meetings many years ago. And he said, look, if you're at a bar watching the game and 100 fans out of 100 think it's a fumble, it probably is a fumble. And I can't imagine if, like, we had to go live to do an emergency show after that game was over with. I think I was going to swear 10 times on the air. I was so mad at my house watching that game and how they did that. I don't want to overreact, but Dabo Swinney needs to find a new career. It ain't coaching.
Yeah.
It's over with, pal.
Go in a broadcast booth.
You do that because you will be gobbled up by one of 10 different networks out there, and it was fun while it lasted. I don't know what the comparison is or the analogy is here to Clemson football, but once the true power, once a team that dominated Alabama and Nick Saban and brought in as good a talent as any team in the country, not even close, never going to happen ever again. I don't want to overreact, Paulie, and I know that you're not on the same page here. I hate the Roger Goodell contract extension. There's one reason why the owners are always going to give this guy an extension, because he's about making as much money as possible for the owners, and he's going to keep expanding the game as much as possible overseas. And you're okay with the game on Thursday night? Playing a Thursday night game in Australia is one of the dumbest and forced things I've ever seen. Why are we doing this? Why are these two teams traveling 17-hour flights to go play a stupid NFL game? You've got to be... It's so unnecessary, and we're going to get... Wait till next year's schedule. What do we have, 11 this year? That's probably going to go up to 15, then 20, and then beyond.
He wants 18, right?
Yeah, it's completely preposterous.
He wants 18 international games.
And I think I'm probably the lone ranger on this one as well. Like, the Wednesday game on Thanksgiving Eve. Outrageous. All these games, the Christmas Day games, playing on Monday night, Thursday night, Wednesday nights, Friday. You're playing 6 days a week. There's one reason. We don't take calls on this network. We could take caller number 10 if we had a phone number right now. And you could be responsible for signing the next big NFL TV contract.
Yep.
I hate it.
Yep.
That's all I got.
Good. I like what Shanahan said, and I think it's accurate. about the Rams being okay with moving this game. Because everyone would be watching Thursday and the pomp and circumstance. Oh, you got Donald. You traded for Garrett. You almost went to the Super Bowl. And it'd be all 49er fans. And you know it. Is Shanahan was right. One of the reasons they were okay doing this. Because if they can take over an NFC title game there, they'll take over a game there anytime.
Well, have you heard about what it's going to be like in Australia?
So it's just the 49er nation is strong and proud. And it just they kind of wanted to save themselves the embarrassment of having the opener at home Thursday. And then it's just it's a 49er home game.
Oh.
And everyone's got to sit there and watch it.
The report that I heard earlier today is that it's going to be the same thing in Melbourne. We're talking about probably 90-10, maybe a little bit more for San Francisco. I mean, they do this wherever they whenever they're good, which is they're almost always good. The Niners have overtaken teams on the East Coast before when they're playing road games. It'll be like 50-50 or more than that, where they just completely dominate the stadium. So that's a powerhouse fan base for sure. And it's gonna be loud for the 49ers in that game coming up. That's a 10:30 a.m. game, by the way. But I don't know. It's baffling to me.
Do it. Great. Let's do it. Come on. What would you rather have? What 3.5-point dog?
No, I think the Niners. You mean it, then them?
You want the Patriots or you want the Niners?
Oh, I want the Niners, yeah.
You do? Okay.
I want the I'd rather have the Niners there.
Well, I can't wait to talk about it Wednesday. A lot of people are surprised Seattle's only 3.5.
I know. Major League Baseball coming up. Good pitchers taking the hill tonight, and he might finally be worth a bet at 6-1. Big moment happened here at Circa not that long ago, as they just posted this on X. They just surpassed the $20 million guarantee in Circa Survivor, $1,000 a pop. They now have 20,017 entries with 5 days to go. So no doubt it's going to go over 25,000.
Aren't you surprised by that?
That it's already that gotten
it's
past
this big?
The number?
Yes. You know how hard it is to win? And go 20-0, and now you got to beat out this many people, and they can't wait to sign up.
I wonder what the ceiling is for the contest with entries.
Oh,
because I don't think there is a ceiling. Imagine if the national law allowed them, because they're in six states, I think. Imagine if they allowed them to sign up their customers in every single state.
What if you could enter twice?
You lose and they come back in?
Or you had to pick two games a week.
That's the thing. Once they add that wrinkle, if they wanted to, if it gets
that
big,
right.
Then we're talking about, oh, man. No, so I think if it touches, well, it's going to go past 25,000 because they're going to average more than 1,000 a day more moving forward. And if it continues to go up by this big of a percentage every single year, the documentary, the network keeps talking about it ad nauseum. Like, I honestly don't know what the ceiling would be.
The other one is Circa Millions. It's like, I know you put a thousand monkeys in a room. One of them will write Shakespeare. You know how hard it is to pick 5 games a week against the NFL? And then I got to beat out 6,000 people?
Oh, that's, yeah.
I mean, that's the other one about, you know, good luck. About how tough it is.
I think
and that's why, again, and I think they only got 800 this year down the street. But this town's in desperate need of a big-time college contest.
Yeah,
because so many people love betting college football, and you need a great contest, and there's so many more games, too.
Well, here's my prediction for that, because the Westgate does that contest. Now, that sportsbook was sold to Caesars not that long ago, right?
Yes.
So they didn't have enough time to really ramp up this year. My prediction is that next year, Caesars is going to dump a lot into that one, and they're going to promote the daylight. I could be wrong on that. But I see them like just going balls to the wall with promoting that contest, their $5,000 buy-in for the Survivor. They still have the Super Contest, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think next year it'll really take off. So the Grandissimo here, $100,000 buy-in, is at 55 on the board right now. Is that going to get, where does that get? 75? That exploded late last year. And we've gotten, I think, 15 people in since late last week.
Will it get to 80?
That's probably
we're running out of time, boss.
It might be a fair number.
Yeah.
I think 70.
I'm going to go under 79.
Okay. All right.
I'll go under 79.
Okay.
This was a huge loss yesterday for the Phillies because Lazardo was the nuts today. Complete game shutout, 12 strikeouts, two hits. Phillies won 1-0. Schwarber goes deep in the eighth. Had they not blown the 4-1 lead in the eighth yesterday, they'd be two back of Atlanta. But as it stands, Atlanta also wins the tiebreaker with that win, and Atlanta's four up with, what, 18 to play.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cubs also lost to Milwaukee. Milwaukee stands eight up. But still, it's a fantastic race between the Brewers and the Dodgers for the one seed. And you can throw Atlanta in there, too. But Atlanta with 59 losses, Milwaukee with 56, the Dodgers with 57.
Well, Dodgers getting hot now against a very durable schedule.
Otani's supposed to play tonight. Burns is on a pitch limit the rest of the season. Undecided for the Dodgers, even though they're $1.80 against Burns.
Is the limit high enough, in your opinion, to take him in the first five? He's been one of the best first five pitchers the entire year.
You can do that, yes.
Yeah. And the Reds have been red hot, by the way.
Yeah.
I guess, pun intended. But they did that was a hell of a weekend series for the Reds. When the Brewers really could have ended things overall, almost like in that division, and then also for the one seed, made it very difficult for the other teams to catch him, obviously. But Burns would be the only look there going against Emmett Sheehan tonight. So maybe a first.
Oh, they didn't announce Sheehan. Okay,
That's what I'm looking at right
now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because I know for a long time that was open.
Got that. How about the respect for the Blue Jays and Cease going tonight against the A's, even though they're a game back? Well, because Cleveland lost earlier today, a half a game behind Cleveland. For the sixth seed, and Cleveland has an easy schedule, they still are even money to get the sixth seed, Cleveland 2-1. Cease does have rough numbers against the A's career, and the streak finally ended. 19 straight starts with 7-plus Ks. He's $2 against the A's on the road. They're playing good ball.
Cleveland,
I know it was tough. Three of the four wins against Detroit were walk-offs.
Mm-hmm.
But they have an easy schedule, doable, and I still think they can run down Chicago. But
you do?
Yeah, they're only 2.5 back. Yeah.
I have a bet on them to win that division, actually. And I just, the White Sox just keep chugging along.
Yeah, good story.
It really is.
But here, what do you think tonight? And if you want to come back with the K-prop with Cease.
Well, his prop has got to be, I didn't even look, 7.5?
Yeah.
Probably juice to the over. You see some of the steam that these numbers take? Yesterday, Gavin Williams on the overnight opened up 7.5 minus 110. He got as high as minus 170 to go over, and he blew by that again yesterday. He now leads all of Major League Baseball. I would say this, for those of you who maybe don't like to bet awards, you don't want to have your money tied up until Thanksgiving week, because I think this year we're getting announced on November, it's November sometime. So you have to wait another 6 weeks till the season ends. I would highly, if you don't bet the home run thing as well, who's going to lead the league, you have to look at most strikeouts for next year. It's a super fun season long. And I have nothing on Mizorowski. He's the one guy that I'm fading around the top. Cause I did. Lazardo was the one guy that I gave out on Potted the Futures back in spring training. And I think it was 60-1. He had 12 today in a complete game, one hit shutout.
Mm-hmm.
He's, I think, 5 or 6 back right now.
Good race.
Williams has a lead. Miz goes tomorrow. He's one back. Gavin Williams, not Gavin Williams. Cease is right there with him, and then Schlittler is lurking.
Yeah?
I don't think he can win it, but if he has another monster performance in his next start, he could get in range.
Good.
Anyway.
Good.
Oh, let me run this by you too as well, Paulie. So the number I was talking about, the bet I was talking about before the break at 6-1 right now, Yordan Alvarez with a triple crown update.
Why is it so high?
He's tied right now in home runs with Junior Caminero. They each have 38. Ben Rice has 36. Yordan has 95 RBIs. Pete Alonso has 94. Caminero, 92. He's got a 314 batting average. Chandler Simpson is 308. Yandy Diaz is 305. Plus 475 to win it at Caesars, 6-1 to win at DK.
Yeah.
Now, he's been cooling down a little bit here. I would also, in certain situations, are they going to pitch around him?
They'll walk him, yeah.
Maybe. But he's leading or tied for every single category, and the number keeps going up on a daily basis. Like, it was a pick'em not that long ago, and now he's 6-1 to actually do this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe right now is time to hop in on that.
I got no problem with that.
Okay.
So all the talk about Arizona, San Diego, St. Louis is only 4 back. No team has scored more runs in September than the Cardinals. They lead the majors in average and slugging. Second in home runs. They take on the Giants tonight. They're dogs. It's Logan Webb against McGreevy.
Yeah, Webb at home.
They are finally at 500. San Diego got Pivetta back, his first start since April. They're up 3-0 in the fifth.
Right.
They needed that. They are half a game back of Arizona, and Arizona beat Kansas City on the road today.
Oh, another thing, by the way, on that note for looking for markets that might make a little bit more sense. When you were out last week, Femi gave out, I thought, a great observation by him. So he bet the Cardinals to be the sixth seed. It was 75-1. They have like almost like literally no chance to be any other seed
but
the six.
Sure.
They were 16 or 20-1 to make the playoffs, but 75-1 to specifically be the sixth seed. Like that's something you have to look at.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. Make sure you pay attention to that every single day.
Good stuff.
Both leagues, whatever.
Yep.
Because
I'm telling you, look at the last place market. There's only a difference between one or two games. Yet these teams are like 4 or 5-1.
I'm curious if they would let you round robin those. Tie together like four
they
different
probably
teams.
Would. They probably would.
Yeah.
One prop on this game tonight, though. Devers is on fire.
Oh, boy, is he ever.
He's homered 9 times in his last 14 games. He had an epic road trip. He homered 6 times in 7 games in Atlanta, Pittsburgh, and New York. He's 5 homers shy of becoming the 4th Giant with a 40 home run season in the last 50 years. Bonds, Matt Williams, and Kevin Mitchell.
Yeah.
Guess what? He's 3-for-5 with 2 home runs career against McGreevy.
Well,
and hit a 370, hit a ball 370 just short in the other at bat.
Okay.
So he's plus money over 1.5 bases at some spots tonight. Devers coming up 5:00 Pacific against McGreevy and the Cardinals.
And how about this? His home run number tonight is not egregious at all. It's higher than 3-1, actually.
Yeah.
You want 2 Utah?
Yeah.
29 or 30-1 from what I'm
not
seeing.
Bad. Wow. What a run.
I'm actually surprised that he's being offered higher than 3-1.
He is locked in.
Typically, you're right. Typically, when a guy has good numbers against the pitcher and he's been red hot, I mean, that number is going to be, what's Schwarber on a daily basis? Plus 240 tops?
Yeah.
Ohtani, when he's cooking, is like around 2-1 sometimes?
Yeah, yeah.
So higher than 3-1?
Sure, yeah,
okay.
Yep.
All right, college football. Brett McMurphy up next, America's Insider. On 3 Sports. Was he aware that we have secret clocks, evidently, in a lot of these stadiums across the country?
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
It's some college football here. Friend of the network, America's Insider, Brett McMurphy joins the program now. He's with On3 Sports. Follow him on X at Brett_McMurphy. As always, my friend, thanks for the time today. Were you aware of secret clocks in stadiums across the country?
No, I haven't. I've been doing this a long time. I wasn't aware that they existed. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's a travesty. I think, you know, it's funny, you know, when the Sorsby thing was happening at Texas Tech, basically everybody except people at Texas Tech are like, the kids shouldn't play.
Right.
Well, we found something else to reunite America, and that is that Western Michigan should have the win. Like, it's not a fluke. It's not a whatever. They should have it. And, again, in the simplest terms, when you have a scoreboard clock, I don't care what the referee's clock says, You've got to honor that clock. That's what everybody's going off of, the players, the coaches, everything. You can't say, well, this clock is not right because it's not synced up and all this other nonsense. I saw Mike Pereira talk about this, the rules analyst at Fox. Obviously, Terry at NBC mentioned this Saturday night. Like, you know, the Big Ten has to explain in a second where it went. But Mike made a great point, and this is exactly what I felt. He's obviously, you know, more qualified in that subject. But basically, his understanding is with the NFL, if there's ever a dispute between a replay and a stadium clock issue, the NFL goes with the stadium clock. They don't go with the replay clock. They don't go with the internal clock.
I think we lost him. Okay.
Damn.
Yeah, he was talking about Mike Pereira.
Okay, yes. Yes.
Yeah, that seems to be logical, doesn't it? So people don't get duped across the entire world.
When the rules analyst is speechless and like, I don't know what they're looking at and how they arrived at this decision, that's when you have problems. And for McCauley to be that, guys, Mike, I mean, for him to be that animated and bothered by it, and it's just that's all you need to know with how McCauley was talking on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Brett, I was saying about also how McCauley's reaction said it all, too. The rules analyst.
Yeah, I mean, when you've got him and Mike Pereira talking about it, it's very simple. And I'm not sure when I got cut off, but Mike basically said in the NFL, if you've got a difference in the replay clock internally and the stadium clock, that you go with the stadium clock. You go with the clock that millions of people see, even if there's a disparity. What the Big Ten did was they went with their super secret clock, and because of that, Michigan got the win.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Now, as far as that, now we're on to next week. Can you make the case after what you watched that Michigan can keep it close against Oklahoma and how bad Underwood looked?
You know, that's going to be the overreaction. And I mean, again, you know, Michigan, I think, was going to be a favorite, and now it's up to 5.5 with Oklahoma. I know this. I got to turn in my AP ballot after the Florida State SMU game, and I dropped Michigan out of my top 25.
Yeah, good move.
Even if they would have won on a Hail Mary legitimately, I still would have dropped them out. You don't go into that game as a 4-touchdown favorite and struggle and have all those issues. There's other teams that are playing so much better.
Sure.
I mean, Paulie, you're absolutely right. You wonder that, you know, sometimes – you know, everybody's zigging one way, and you got to be the contrarian and say, okay, nobody wants Michigan this week. I'm going to take Michigan. But, man, if you do, hold your nose, and hopefully Underwood can figure out what's going on.
The other abomination was what LSU did to Clemson, and you had some great tweets on what happened. But I couldn't believe – I mean, your tweet, in the third quarter, Clemson had 3 first downs. LSU had 6 touchdowns. But then before the final drive – the yards were, 580? How can that happen? 51-3 late in the game.
Yeah, there was a lot of funny videos and stuff. You know, there was guys breaking down, and there was literally a play where Clemson's – and the offensive guard and the offensive tackle both, like, ran out to the left guard, left tackle, both shot out to the left. And there was literally a guy lined up in front of them that, you know, they might as well had a bullfighting, you know, flag, and just kind of wave a cape and waved it at him because he literally just walked in. We could have made the sack. Yeah, it was bad. I mean, you know, look, Lane's going to be Lane, but he's saying, you know, he thought that, you know, he was surprised Clemson's offense would look that dysfunctional. There was video of him, you know, when Ole Miss gets a turnover, they've got a 7-foot or 8-foot hoop on the sideline where they give the player a ball and he goes up and dunks on it. In the fourth quarter, Kiffin's shooting jumpers from the sideline. I swear to God, you can find it on Twitter. I've never seen anything like this. Man, I hate to see it for Dabo because Clemson wouldn't be Dabo without Dabo. But, you know, this look, and I'm an Oklahoma State guy, this reminds me a lot of what happened at Oklahoma State with Gundy at the end. What does Clemson do?
Well, and then based on that result and then watching Ole Miss's defense last night, the look-ahead line when they meet in 2 weeks, Ole Miss was favored. There's no way they're favored once that number reopens, right?
Because I think if you make LSU a favorite, you're going to have everybody coming in on Ole Miss. I'm sure everybody, you know, on the face of the earth will take the over after that game, after, you know, the first week's results. But you know, should LSU be favored? Probably. They want two-way action. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be either side's going to be more than 3, Mitch. That would be my guess.
Okay.
Your level of concern with your pick to win it all after watching Oregon and Boise State?
You know what? After I went back and kind of did a deep dive on the stats, I didn't watch, you know, I was flipping around, so I didn't see every game. I'm not as concerned. I mean, look, you've got to win. Like, technically Michigan can still win the national title. They won the game. I don't care how bad they look. They're not going to. Oregon outgained Boise State by more than 200 yards. Yeah, they only pulled out a 7-point win. So I'm not that concerned about it. I mean, I know everybody's all jacked up with the, you know, overreactions, and it's like, okay, LSU's going to win the national title this, you know, now after 1 week. I'm not concerned, Paulie. I still like Oregon. Again, all you got to do is get in the 12-team playoff. You don't even have to win your conference. Very confident that Oregon will be in there, one of three, possibly four Big Ten teams, and then we'll see what happens. Their offense looked incredible. I mean, you know, Dante Moore, almost 400 yards passing. Three receivers, almost 100 yards each. You know, they got some issues defensively, but, you know, they got 14 weeks to figure that out.
Yep. What happens tonight if it's 35-10 SMU?
You're having me on tomorrow asking me if Norvell is going to be fired. Look, I don't think Florida – I mean, this is a two-game stretch for Florida State. They've got Alabama next week or in 2 weeks. If they start 1-2, you know, he's basically going to have to run the table to keep his job. Uh-huh. The question is, when does Florida State decide to pull the plug? We saw last year when Penn State thought they were going to outsmart everybody and, hey, we're going to get rid of James Franklin early, so we're going to get ahead of the game and we're going to line up our next coaching candidate. Wrong. You gave every coach in America a new deal and a raise because everybody locked their guys up because they didn't want them to go to Penn State. So I think Florida State will wait till the end of the year before they do something. But, yeah, Paulie, I can't – if they lose to SMU and then if Alabama takes care of business sitting at 1-2 and they still got Miami on the schedule, I mean, you know, I don't see anything less than 9 wins keeping Norvell in Tallahassee.
Yeah. Again, I don't want to overreact. You just mentioned the team there, the other team in the ACC from that state. They looked awesome. It was Stanford. I get it. But based on their schedule and how it could pop this year for Mensa and also Tony, they're around 10-1 to win the national title. You think that's worth a bet?
I do, Mitch, because, again, they should get into the playoff. You know, they've got the non-conference schedule. They've got a huge game later on at Notre Dame, the big revenge spot for Notre Dame. They don't have to go undefeated to get in there. You look at their schedule, suddenly that at Clemson game doesn't really have a lot of teeth. And, you know, they host Virginia Tech. Maybe Virginia Tech's a little bit better. I don't know. They beat the tomato can, so that's impossible to tell last week. But, yeah, Mitch, I'd say they would be because I think they would be in a great position, and then they would, at worst, they would host a first-round playoff game. And then, you know, last year they opened on the road, and then they still got to the national title game. And then with a 10-1, I think that's a pretty good number for Miami, again, barring catastrophic injuries. And then once you get deeper in the playoff, ability to head out if you want. But, no, I would be all for that. I mean, Jesus. Mensch is the favorite after one game.
I know.
Crazy.
Yes.
Awesome stuff, Brett. Thanks so much for the time today. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Follow him on X at Brett_McMurphy. You can also read him at On3. They do a great job covering college football. On3.com. Up next, our in-pocket plays here on Follow the Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To determine the winner of any given college basketball game.
Someone gives you 10,000 to 1 on anything. You take it. Take it. Take it.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I'll give you 3-1 odds.
Nope.
5-1.
Nope.
10-1.
You're right.
All right. Ton of injuries for Stanford. Probably wouldn't have mattered. Feel free to cover Tony. Ugly. That dog had fleas. As Miami pounds Stanford Friday night. Brown. This is a tough watch, the Auburn-Baylor game. He had 21 rushing attempts.
Is that right?
Yeah. Now, the problem is he got sacked five times, so with the props in college, the sacks count against your rushing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that surprised me.
I did not see. What did you end up with in that game?
He had 21 rushes for 28 yards.
Wow.
His long was 21. He had a 21-yard rush.
Okay, well, then file that away, though, right? Because he's going to...
My God,
how many
I
attempts
know.
Is he going to get on a
daily, like,
game-by-game
basis? It's like watching LSU and Leavitt.
Yeah.
Although, you know, much better outfit.
How about laddering him in that
supposed,
game?
Oh, man. I mean, if they played the whole game, yes. And then Rabinka, an easy winner. Couldn't believe the price against Osaka. Luke put it up on a picks page last night. $1.31 in straight sets. Took her out 6-1 in the first set. And Osaka was battling an injury, too. So she moves on to the quarters, where she meets that gal who has won back-to-back matches, down 5-0 in the third set and 5-0 in the first set. Did she beat Iga today?
You said today, watching that match, I was not watching the match at all.
Yes.
But you said it was evident that it was a great live betting opportunity.
This would be a fun discussion, maybe. We can do it next week and stretch out with Mike Palm. Like, about our tennis matches too long? Because these gals and guys are dropping like flies. I mean, the trainer's out there 4 or 5 times on Iga. And then you saw what happened to Joker. Then you saw what happened to Sinner.
Huh.
And should you really play? Should a tennis match really be 4.5 hours?
Probably not, but it's always been like that.
Yeah, I know. Are we doing it wrong? I mean, should it really go that long is what I'm saying, too. But that was also a good in-play opportunity because when she was leading 5-0, the wheels came off. The gal won the last 7 matches to steal the first set. But then by the end of it, you could see she's calling for the trainer. She's grabbing her calf. She's not herself. And then she loses. And that's happened several times, not only in the U.S. Open, but in several tournaments. Not impressed at all with Texas Tech. That was lousy against Abilene Christian. And Oregon State appears to be improved. Hung in there against a top 25 team and got the money against Houston. A night game in Corvallis getting 26.5? Okay. Go get them Beavers.
Yeah.
Against the Red Raiders Saturday night.
I don't mind that bet at all. Fresno, USC over. Thought I might have been in some trouble when the number went the other way by 0.5 point. I got my points from USC.
What a performance.
You told me that, by the way, before the game, that they're going to give me that many points. I'm like, yeah, Fresno can get 14.
Yeah, right.
I would have had a much bigger bet on it than that. Loser. Awesome defensive performance. They get the shutout. They were super excited about it. Good for them. Awesome win, but that's a losing proposition from yours truly. Onward and upward we march. Tonight, found plus T. You ran down all the numbers. I actually was looking for him to lead the league in home runs.
Wow.
When he was 5 back the other day after he hit his 35th.
$1.10 over 1.5 total bases. Yeah. This guy's not going to get a double tonight the way he's rocking and rolling.
But not. I didn't see a single book with Rafael Devers listed.
Uh-huh.
Good thing, because I would have bet him at like 200-1. But now Schwarber has an 8 home run lead because he hit another one today. He's got 43. But tonight, with good numbers against McGreevy and he's scorching hot, I found plus
got
3.
It.
If you search around, plus 389 on him to hit a home run. I think that's absolutely worth betting. Not only hot, but that on that price. Okay, I'll take a shot with that.
Who do you like tonight? This is a tough
Well,
game.
Boy, that obvious play is SMU, but it's too obvious.
I know. Everyone likes SMU. Florida State might
This game is potentially very similar to Oklahoma and Michigan.
Yeah. I just can't. It seems Jennings is another quarterback that's regressed. SMU quarterback. Football season's here. Sharp money already moving. Here's how the Sharp play sees it first. They track every line before the public ever sees it through exclusive data feeds from 4 major books, thousands of Sharp bettors, pro syndicates, all filtered and sorted by their AI model, and the receipts, every play logged, every result public, records back to 2011, live logged since 2021. No login, no paywall, no steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycled plays. That's the Sharp money every game all season long. Follow the Sharp money at sharpplays.com, reaching out to subscribers and bettors in real time, reaching out to bettors and sources worldwide, over 500 sources, and sending out to subscribers in real time. You got to get on with Jeff and the Sharp Plays at sharpplays.com. Let's try something that you referenced last week. Okay, give this a shot. Tiafoe plays tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Pacific.
Okay.
I cannot believe he's only $1.50 in his quarterfinal match. He has made two deep runs in his career, both at the U.S. Open. He's made the semis twice, 2022 and 2024. The crowd loves him. He's full of energy and passion. A lot of enthusiasm. Reminds me a little bit of Connors, how he gets riled up and fired up, and he just beat Medvedev in straight sets. He is undefeated at Louis Armstrong Court. This will be at Arthur Ashe, though. He works out in D.C. from the area, so DeBonce is his buddy. He's there, and his family's there. And Lisa Leslie's there rooting him on as well. Give me Mickelson plus $1.40.
You're going to go opposite?
The opposite. It doesn't make any sense. It's like, why is he only a dollar? This is the furthest he's ever been. The lights are going to be too bright. He's never been on this stage before. It's at Arthur Ashe tomorrow morning. This guy's made two deep runs in the last 4 years. He's a hell of a player. Everyone's going to be rooting for him. I know he's playing another American, but why is it only $1.50?
Okay, but here's the thing, is that I have not won an underbet in baseball this year, I don't think. That's why I said I won. But you've been doing okay betting the U.S. Open. Or have you been getting killed betting the U.S. Open?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you've been doing okay.
Now, here's what is interesting. Mickelson, 22-year-old, Laguna Hills.
Oh, God's country.
He's the fifth American in the last 30 years to make the quarters of a major, and he hasn't dropped a set. But the guy's playing on all these outside courts. No one's ever heard of him. Mm. So he comes in under the radar, hasn't dropped a set, and here he is in the quarters, but he's got to take on Tiafoe. Luke says Tiafoe's got the better chance to win it for an American as opposed to Shelton.
Okay.
I think it's Shelton, and that's fireworks tomorrow night against Alcaraz.
Well, that's the thing, is that he has to go through him already at this point.
And Alcaraz has won 13 in a row in majors against Americans, and that's who he has to beat if he's going to go to the final.
Seth Walder, good breakdown, Paulie. Seth Walder with on ESPN.com, they analyzed and simulated the NFL season 10,000 times. Lions over the Chargers in the Super Bowl.
Come on.
Lions beat the Bills by their projections 20-17. I'm sorry, Lions beat the Rams 20-17. Chargers beat the Bills 10-7 AFC title
okay.
game.
Okay, be great.
Maybe that would be.
That'd also be awesome if both LA teams had home field. We'd have to have a Monday night AFC title game or something like that as well. Also, this is terrible news. Retweeted it. Tuesday, Luke reached out to Mike Dottilia to come on the show and talk LSU and Saints. And Mike got back to him right away. I'm having tests done at the hospital. Sorry, I have to pass. Okay, another time. He passed away yesterday. He found out he had cancer. Yeah, he was such a great guest and person. And Kellen Moore started his press conference off by saying condolences to his family and WWL radio and all his colleagues. And he was such a great person, respected in that community. And it just...
devastating.
Like, you found out he had cancer, and it lasted like 2 days. And he passed away yesterday.
Nothing worse.
Oh, my God.
Nothing worse.
I look forward to his visits.
Every time he was on.
He always brought good nuggets. He had a great draft guide and was awesome on draft previews and that great accent. And I just cannot believe that Luke reached out Tuesday to get him on the show. He said, sorry, I have to pass, and you get the news yesterday.
And as the season is starting and he's covered the Saints and LSU and SEC football for, four decades? And as the season's starting, I'm going to go get some tests on. Whoop, that's it for him. Every time Luke would tell us Mike Dottilia is on the program tomorrow, I'd be like, absolutely going to be awesome 10 minutes with him. Loved listening to him talk about football.
Yeah.
He was so good. And by the way, we appreciate that because so many of you reached out on Twitter after you saw the news as well. And so that means a lot for someone to come on a couple of times a year with us and for him to have an impact. It's touching to see that when the people were reaching out who are fans of the show as well. He was one of my favorite football guests.
Yes.
Good to have you back, buddy.
I get that.
How are your teeth doing?
Hanging in there. Okay. A lot of ice cream. We'll be good.
More pills? Got to take tonight?
Of course, Paul Bovey's in town and reaches out for a steakhouse.
Dinner tonight, yeah.
Yeah, good job, Paul. Two hours notice. Thanks, Paul.
Don't go anywhere. Primetime next. Matt Youmans, Will Hill up next tonight. Get the sportsbook side of the line moves as they go behind the counter with DraftKings' Johnny Avello.
Monday Night Football.
Cashing out after Dustin Sweetelson, 11 p.m. Eastern. Start your day tomorrow bright and early. Dave and Jensen, VSiN by the book, 7 a.m. Eastern. Best of luck tonight.